Roz Story has reported that police officers in Lansing, Michigan, are in hot water after an investigative report by the local ABC News affiliate, WXYZ, turned up some recordings that the cops didn't know existed. The Omni Drug Task Force executed a search warrant on the home of Rudy Simpson in June 2008. They found a small bag of marijuana and half a pain pill that he had been prescribed. While talking about what they should do, officers began to eye the expensive recording equipment around Simpson's home, ultimately deciding that they could very well take everything if they wanted to, thanks to the drugs they'd found. What they didn't realize is that when they raided the home, Simpson and friends were in the middle of a recording session, and their microphones were live. Listen to the recordings for yourself, and you'll hear several cops talking about the small amount of marijuana they found and how that gives them the power to take everything in the home. When the cops were finally done, they ended up taking several personal items, such as jewelry and a television set. Simpson alleges they took even more than that, noting that nearly $4,000 in cash was missing as well. All of this over a personal amount of marijuana and a prescribed pain pill. When people say the war on drugs isn't working, they aren't talking about a success in the eyes of a drug task force. It seems to be working perfectly well for them. The Silicon Valley Mercury News is reporting that Oakland Police Department will have to rehire Officer Hector Jimenez, who was fired after a 2008 shooting, in which he killed an unarmed man who was running away from him. Jimenez shot Mac Jody Woodfox, 27, in July 2008, after Woodfox led officers on a short vehicle chase in the Fruitvale neighborhood. When Woodfox pulled over, a witness said he got out of the car with his hands up, but ran when officers started shooting. Jimenez was among the officers at the scene and said he fired at Woodfox, hitting him 3 times in the back, when he saw Woodfox reaching for his waistband as he ran in the direction of a second police officer. Jimenez said he thought the other officer was in danger and that he fired to protect him. Woodfox's family found that explanation unacceptable and hired civil rights attorney John Burris to sue the police department. The city eventually settled with the family for $650,000, and Jimenez was fired. Jimenez continued to contest his treatment by the city, and under an arbitration agreement announced last week, he will be reinstated and given back pay. The Woodfox shooting was the second time in 7 months Jimenez had shot and killed an unarmed man. That's it for this edition. This is Nick signing off. Keep it right here on LRN.FM for more liberty-oriented programming.
Just remember to go 55, 'cause all around the county every woman and man knows we'll pull you over just to play our banjos.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us, but if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Remember, we are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the farm of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. You know, we're going over today, I'm refreshing my memory on a lot of the news of the first Gulf War, which I was a young man, didn't really, you know, I'm like, just like they say in Wag the Dog, I'm just watching the missile go down, the smart bomb going down that same chimney over and over and over. You know, and I remember the same feeling I had towards the media when I was young in Florida, I lived there till like 72. I was 12 years old. So, and I remember watching Vietnam footage every evening on the evening news. They had some Vietnam footage or whatever, but it was the same footage. I go, seriously? You can't go get, you know, a different guy firing an M16 into the jungle. I mean, you know, it's just, and they do the same thing. I mean, if it worked once, it'll work again. And they're doing it again. Same. If you're, I mean, how many times do I have to go through this to see that it's just a formula? You know, I'm going to be 50 here at the end of the month. And I've been through this cycle. Because of the internet and so on, you can go back and see how they've lied us into other previous wars. You know, the Gulf of Tonkin, it's going to be the Gulf of whatever it is there, Tripoli. It's going to be the Gulf. I remember there was a big deal about the confrontation with Navy planes under the Reagan administration. They tried to, I think it was 86, they tried to kill Gaddafi. They bombed where he lived, killed some of his children. So, I mean, you know, if that doesn't make you freaking crazy, I don't know what will. You're probably crazy before, but why are we, why? Well, the United States Central Command is getting software, has it. I'm kind of shocked that, you know, they're just now coming out. Well, you know, whatever they admit to having, they've had for a while. Because you think the government, you know, doesn't have really cool hardware that we don't know about? You never know. You know, I would imagine they do. It's called DARPA. Earlier this month, the web buzzed. Now, this is Spy Talk, Jeff Stein's Intelligence for Thinking People. And it's he wrote it for the Washington Post. Earlier this month, the web buzzed with the report that the software was designed to manage fake people on social media sites and create the illusion of consensus on controversial issues, implying that the Defense Department was targeting critics of the war in Afghanistan and other conflicts. Further compounding a sinister view of the software was the discovery of emails from the head of a company implicated in dirty tricks against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange and a pro-labor organization, which discussed how such technology could be used. There are a variety of social media tricks we can use to add a level of realness to all fictitious personas, wrote Aaron Barr, blah, blah, blah. This is, you know, does this shock you? During the 08 presidential campaign, there was a lot, you know, and I just saw her name within the last couple of weeks on Freedom's Phoenix. Laura Flores. Hi, Laura. You know, it always goes, and you know, it's Obama administration. And it's more than just supporters. It is like there's a theme out there, and all of a sudden, it'll permeate the internet. It'll come from all these, and they're all, I remember them admitting that Attorney General Holder or something had an office where these people were doing their checking the internet, doing whatever, and they got this in the White House now, or is it certainly part of the campaign, but it's in the White House. They're out there, you know, I don't know what they call it, how they justify it, but we're just, you know, keeping it real for the folks or something, whatever, they're on the internet. And they're seeding, and they know what sites to go to and things. And certainly during the Revolution, Freedom's Phoenix got its dose. Now we get a lot more hit from the neocons, the right. They're, you know, wanting to put their stuff up. So a lot of times you'll see kind of, what the heck's that doing? That's them. I let them go. It's so obvious, man. You guys just keep doing it. The left has yet to come back again. We'll see. They're starting a little bit. You know, just the last couple of weeks, we're starting to get the left. But the reason that you're not seeing it is because the left and the right have the same mantra. Foreign entanglements, the economy, spending more money, extending the debt ceiling, doing, I mean, it's just, now you'll get the little Tea Party rhetoric and so on. Oh, and here in Arizona, we're saved. You know what they did? You know what they did? You can get a Tea Party license plate now. And the money goes to some 501. Because, you know, seriously? So this is what's going on there. Now, as this is happening within I don't know when they plan on actually doing the movie, but Spielberg has bought the rights to the WikiLeaks book. Steven Spielberg's DreamWorks Studios, this is from Ross' story, a story out of London. Steven Spielberg's DreamWorks Studios have bought the rights to a book written by two British journalists about WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, their newspaper said Thursday. The rights to the book have been purchased by DreamWorks, said a spokeswoman for The Guardian, which published the secret U.S. diplomatic cables released by the whistleblowing website last year. Editor-in-chief Alan Rusbridger told the newspaper the firm would be Woodward and Bernstein meets Stieg Larsson meets Jason Bourne, plus the odd moment of sheer farce, and in Julian Assange, a compelling character who goes beyond what any Hollywood scriptwriter would dare to invent. Blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, Julian Assange, he's kind of a playboy. You know, You know, is that what this is about? Don't even care. What, you know, it's State Department's cable, man. What do you care, you know, what I do after I released it to you and what brothel I went to or whatever? Who cares? Well, this is where this is coming out. You know, it's going to be like all the president's men all over again. To what effect? I don't know. They just, you know, rearrange the people. You know, what happened during Watergate? You know, they got rid of Nixon. Oh, it's all better now? Come on, come on, come on. You know, this is, it's the same old, same old, same old, same old. Now, the State Department, this is from Tony Cartolucci. It was published on prisonplanet.com. And this was, it was before the week. You know, let's see, it's like, I think it was Monday or Tuesday that this came out. Believe it or not, the U.S. State Department's mission statement actually says the following. Advance freedom for the benefit, this is a quote, advance freedom for the benefit of the American people and the international community by helping to build and sustain a more democratic, secure, and prosperous world composed of well-governed states that respond to the needs of their people, reduce widespread poverty, and act responsibly within the international system. This is the United States State Department mission statement. You know, I advocate a world composed of well-governed states and act responsibly within the international system. That's our job. You know, isn't this what Dr. Paul keeps going about, what the, you know, the founders of this country saying, this is the one thing you don't want to do? And we're starting to live it as to why. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, from Phoenix, Arizona, where it's very nice. I'm going to look forward to enjoying the rest of the day. And we get down to the meat of it next week. So what we're doing today is I got to start, you know, I can't put it off anymore. I got to start getting all up on what's going on in the Middle East and Libya and so on. A lot of the guests that Sierra's booked for me for next week. And we're starting off the week with Butler Schaefer, 2 hours on Monday. That's going to be cool. And he really had a big impact on me early on, the first person that could articulate. And this is a constitutional law professor. And still at Southwestern University in L.A. And he's just, you know, you need to have a government because why? He make a good argument. You can't outdo Butler. So it's going to be entertaining. I'm hopefully Mark Victor can join us because Butler's his mentor during law school as his professor. Now, the one thing I did want to emphasize here on Prison Planet, they had this mission statement that I guess you can go find on the, I mean, it's not a secret, of the U.S. State Department to build and helping to build and sustain more democratic, secure, prosperous, whatever, helping to build and sustain. What the heck do you think they've been doing, this Mubarak thing and House Assad and Yemen and, you know, Egypt, on and on and on and on and on, and I don't want them to help anymore. What, you're from the U.S. government and you're here to help? Not. Thank you. You know, this is way from what was the promise of what the State Department should have done, which was, you know, maintain communications and formal relations with foreign countries. And I'm just, you know, formal relations for Margaret representing us to other countries. You know what our State Department should be? It should be our court system. You know, thou break our law. You know, this is what happens. There's our relation right there. You know, read the law. You want to do business with us? Well, this is how it works. And I, what else do you need? Other than, you know, I just like Ben Franklin version, man. He's just over there partying in France and, you know, how many brothels he can go to. So I'm just, but now, you know, in Prison Planet, this article written by, scroll up to it, Tony Cartolucci, you know, he said, now it's the Department of Imperial Expansion. Because, indeed, that is its primary purpose now. The expansion of Anglo-American corporate hegemony worldwide under the guise of democracy and human rights. That a U.S. government department should state its goal as to build a world of well-governed states within the international system, yeah, I caught on that too, betrays not only America's sovereignty, but the sovereignty of all nations entangled by this offensive mission statement and its execution. The illegitimacy of the current U.S. State Department fits in well with the overall Constitution circumventing empire that the American Republic has degenerated into. The current Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, gives a daily affirmation of this illegitimacy every time she bellies up to the podium and further makes a mockery of America, its people, and its destiny. Recently, she issued a dangerously irresponsible warning to Venezuela and Bolivia regarding their stately relations with Iran. Well, America has the right to mediate its own associations with foreign nations. One is confounded trying to understand what gives America the right to dictate such associations to other sovereign nations. Of course, the self-declared imperial mandate the U.S. State Department bestowed upon itself brings such warnings into perspective with the realization that the globalist view, no nation as sovereign and all nations beholden to their unipolar international system, it's already a world government in their mind. That's how they think. You know, and they're, you know, doing the Khrushchev thing and banging the shoe on the podium, the UN saying, you know, we rule you, or we're going to, or we can evaporate you with our nuclear weapons, you know, blah, 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 15 times over, whatever. Hillary Clinton, seriously, you know, she wants to be seen, and this happened during the 08 election cycle. It was how militaristic, neocon, we're going to go get Iran, we love Israel, could she be? Remember the campaign with her and Obama? It was, who do you want answering the phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning? Heck, I just soon not, you know, have anybody answer. Heck, I don't even have a phone. I mean, just let it, you know, let it go, man. Let it go. No, we got to control people. We got to be involved. And if you have any doubt, you know, here's Zbigniew Brzezinski on Al Jazeera. Now, this was just a few days ago, and he's like, yeah, we shouldn't be policemen of the world, but we should send troops and warships to Libya. Oh, well, heck yeah, we need to do that. And this is only about a minute. Let's see if we can get it to go. Whoop, I pushed the wrong thing, and the correct one. Here we go.
doing the right one.
In. I get it. It was Zbigniew Brzezinski on Al Jazeera making it clear what he wanted. He's like, yeah, man, you know, we need to have troops and warships to Libya because it's a special thing. It's different. This is different. It's not like the, you know, other, you know, we shouldn't be in this one and shouldn't entangle and we shouldn't be, you know, doing troops and so on. But, you know, this time it's a little bit different. Why is it different? There's always going to be, there's something going, you know, Libya is a nice little prize. You know, I think it's in the top 10 oil producers, you know, so that, you know, has what kind of impact? You know, they want it. I know that. Here, let me see. I want you to hear this. Let me see if I can change this out. Go. And see, one more button I got to fix. Well, you guys had to suffer. Well, we'll go ahead and get that in the next segment because I want you to hear this from Brzezinski because he's always been part of this Middle East. We got to go what? Serve the interest of Israel. He makes it clear. There is a war drum beating for us to now have a presence on the Mediterranean and North Africa. To what interest? Who benefits from this? I don't even know what their argument is. You know, they care about human rights or something? What about here? Well, Hillary's screaming that they should be nice to their people. Right in front of her, they're beating up Ray McGovern, an ex-CIA analyst, because he wears an anti-war t-shirt. Crazy days. I'm counting on the next generation to save us all. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, the Panzer March from Battle of the Bulge, an old World War II movie made back in the 50s, I think. And, you know, this, it always, when they're starting all the war drums, you know, it just reminds me of this song, you know. It just, I remember this was the, there was a scene towards the end of Battle of the Bulge that, you know, they, you know, to motivate themselves up, they start singing, you know, and it was at the end of the movie also, but it's just this once more into the breach. We're a militaristic country. You know, this is the mindset that they're trying to get. If we're not at war with somebody, you know, we have a low self-esteem or something. We got to have a team to root for with the bullets. Wow. You know, is that the future of humanity? I don't think so. I really don't. Because it's not productive. You know, it's productive for a few, but as time goes on, we keep getting more and more access to information of how these policies affect us directly and quickly, swiftly. It's a lot faster cycle than it used to be. See, that's why they call it revolution. It goes round and round and round. It keeps repeating. And I've heard a lot of different versions of how it does. But basically, you know, you have revolutions and you start off with liberty. And you might get it for a week or two. Egypt, you know, had it for at least a day or two before they start doing whatever the heck it is they're going to do with the military and U.S. and kind of, and what is it? Obama wanted $150 million just to help him with blah, 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 you know, to get to bribe the right people. And now we have the State Department of the U.S. We have Sarkozy, the Prime Minister of France. They're all ready meeting with Libyan opposition leaders, whatever the heck that is. I'm, you know, wow. Now, this Brzezinski thing I had, I was just confused on. We changed it around. I was thinking it was a different computer I was playing the video from, but we don't have video, but we got the audio. So we'll go ahead, and I want you to hear this short interview. It's less than a minute, and here they are saying what our goal. Now, keep in mind, the State Department, what are they saying? You know, to bring about the kind of governments we want, to be in the international community, or you don't get to know the secret handshake or something. Yep.
We spoke to Zbigniew Brzezinski, a former national security advisor to the Carter administration.
Al Jazeera.
He says the U.S. should play a more strategic role.
We are not destined, nor should we be, to act as the sole policeman of the world, whether it is in our interest or it is not. I think we have to judge each case on its merits. But in this particular case, I do think that some greater but indirect involvement would send the right message and move events in Libya in the right direction. I think a deployment of ships right off the shores of Tripoli would in itself send an important message. If it was tied also to the possible unilateral evacuation of Westerners, it would send a stronger message. And all of that would be an indication to the very uncertain and divided Libyan military that it is not in their interest to be supporting Gaddafi.
Yep, because we got big ships. This was, what was he? He was Secretary of State, or he was advisor to Carter. He's out of the Carter administration. And let's go ahead and do a search on what was his history. Because I remember, you know, he keeps popping up. You know, all these guys, you know, blah, 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 blah. Are we supposed to memorize all these guys? And that's one thing I got to share with you. Behind the scenes, when Charles and I do our shows are a little bit different. Because he was very much into all of the people involved. Man, he had it down on Rumsfeld. I just hammered on. He was great at it, just chronicling all the stuff that he had done. Yeah, I was Carter's national security advisor. So he's kind of like the Condoleezza Rice of the Carter administration. Then he goes on. He'd done a bunch of other stuff, but who cares? The thing is that he would really hammer on the individuals. And I, you know, that's fine. Everybody, you know, division of labor, we all do our own thing. But I didn't do that. I'm like, it's just another shiny badge. It's just another name. You know, they're going to put another guy behind, you know, ooh, we got rid of Rumsfeld. Now here's Gates. And then Gates was in the Bush administration and kept by Obama. Okay, here's the anti-war president that gets elected. You know, we're gonna pull out and be done and go and not and whatever. And what does he do? He keeps the same Secretary of Defense from the Bush administration. Hello. And here we have Wall Street. He just, you know, took Goldman Sachs and just, you know, populated his administration. So I'm, wow, 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 wow. Here we have the new geometry and the new math. This is the article that prompted me to schedule Butler Schaefer. And we were really lucky he's going to be in town. And he's just, he really puts it down. I'm just going to read a couple paragraphs real quick, real short, and then you kind of get the idea. He starts off, feminist groups in Iraq, or this is a quote from Shireen Ebadi. She's a 2003 Nobel Peace Prize recipient. The feminist groups in Iraq are very strong. Their approach is unique because they have no leaders. They do not have a head of branch offices. This movement is made even stronger by not having leaders. If one or two people lead it, the organization would weaken if these leaders were arrested. Because there is no leader, it is very strong and not stoppable. Now, this is what he's been preaching ever since I've known him, for over a decade. And the one thing that brought to mind was the king of Saudi Arabia all of a sudden coming, you know, okay, well, I guess we can capitulate a little bit on this one. We'll compromise. We'll, you know, we'll let women drive. And I'm going, they're still not driving? Seriously? Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay. Then Butler goes on to say in his own words, for a number of years, I have been writing and speaking about the decentralizing forces that are bringing about the collapse of our highly structured, institutionalized society. Such warnings must always be listened to with skepticism, for it is the nature of any complex system to generate unpredictable outcomes. Nonetheless, events of recent years provide confirmation of my prognostications. Alternative schooling,
dispute resolution, and healthcare practices, political secession and nullification movements, the decentralization of management and business organizations, news reporting moving from the centrally controlled top-down model of traditional media to the more dispersed horizontally networked internet, individualized technologies such as personal computers, cell phones, iPods, video cameras, and other innovations that enhance person-to-person communication, are just the more evident examples of how our social systems are undergoing constant centrifugation. Okay, I'll look that up. You guys look it up too. If the successful practice in a number of European cities of abandoning government traffic signs in favor of a motorist-controlled system does not impress you, perhaps you will recall the collapse of the Soviet Union. So he's given examples of what he's been talking about. And what you're talking about, the traffic signs, say, this is a big deal. God, like a year or two ago, we had on Freedom's Phoenix and so on. I think it started in the Netherlands. And they just said, you know what? We're just not going to have speed limits. We're not going to have traffic signs. We're not going to have intersection lights. We're just going to let the drivers deal with it. And one of the interesting things that they did, people were, of course, speeding, and they had topless, you know, bikini babes. I mean, you know, as Swedish bikini team or something out there without the top of the bikini, holding up signs, you know, slow down. And you know what? And they slowed down. And then they had the squares. They just, you know, people just know there's people walking around a square. They just slow down. You know, they do the roundabout. So they do what they just wanted to get away from all these laws and controls and traffic. And it's more of a community now. And they love it. It's happening all over the world. Let it happen to your mind. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
No wrong, no right. I'm gonna tell you there's no black and no white. No blood, no stain. All we need is
one world, one vision.
One flesh, one bone.
Yeah, we just need one worldwide vision, one worldwide religion. No right, no wrong, no black, no white. It's the U.S. government, State Department. You know, I am just, wow. I always think of that song. It's Queen from Iron Eagle, the movie. It was about, I think, going into Libya, getting his dad that got shot down an F-16. Some teenager and his buddies, you know, stole an F-16 with Lou Gossett Jr. and another one got him. Yep. Militaristic version of everything. You know, we got to go kick somebody's butt. Well, what I want to leave you with today is, you know, the book of Charles Goyette, The Dollar Meltdown, he had so much. It was just packed. I learned more from the first 30 pages of that book than most college classes I took in economics. So I just, you know, you really should get it. And it's timeless. It's timeless. And the last part of the book is, you know, what should you do and invest? And he really pushed the ETFs, you know, like GLD for gold and silver one and that kind of thing. And if you took his advice, you know, in the last year, you doubled your money or more. So the boy got some skills. Well, the thing in there, he had a lot of good stuff in there. And the one point that I wanted to bring up is all this control or the economics in the Middle East, because this is all going to dissolve into, they're going to do something else. And they don't want it to be free. They don't want it to be left alone. They have to manage it, because you leave people alone, especially when they got something big, natural resources like oil. I mean, it's just a cash machine that's coming out, and they could develop that into whatever, do a lot of things like Iran is doing. Iran is developing nuclear power. So they could sell their oil. They don't want to consume it all. They're a growing economy. You know, they're just, heck, man, we just sell it. You know, you have the Three Gorges Dam
in China, that's going to be, man, that's going to be generating a lot of power. They'd be up and down that river. They're going to have lots of cities. So it's going to be a lot about energy and the autonomy from the international community and being able to do what you want. But they don't want you to do what you want. They want you to, you know, borrow. They want you to off the work you go. But he brings in a little bit of history of what happened after World War II in Germany. So I want to read a few paragraphs for you here. It'll just take me a few minutes, but you'll really get a good history lesson from Charles. But maybe there is no DNA code for freedom in the American psyche. Now, let me go ahead and start. It's about wage and price controls. I'll start the paragraph before it makes more sense. During episodes of wage and price controls, it is tempting to think that perhaps something has been forgotten in the American character. Because price controls really aren't about controlling prices, which, after all, have no volition of their own. They are about controlling free people who are now forbidden from engaging in non-coercive commercial activities. But maybe there is no DNA code for freedom in the American psyche. Maybe the nation has coasted for more than 200 years on the vision of a few of the founders, and the experiment with freedom has run its course. Perhaps it is a replication failure of the liberty gene. If so, it began several generations ago. Germany's stunning economic miracle took place over American and British objections. In 1948, the German economy was still as broken and as non-productive as it had been 3 years earlier when the war ended. The Allied occupation government had a command economy in place, complete with wage and price controls and rationing, some of which were remnants of the defeated Nazi government. Goods were scarce. What commerce there was consisted of primitive barter in cigarettes, chocolate, and nylon stockings. It was in this environment that economic official Ludwig Erhard went on nationwide radio on a holiday weekend, knowing that the occupying military governors would be away and not quickly able to object, and he abolished the controls. General Lucius Clay was the American military governor in Germany at the time. He told Erhard that his advisors insisted lifting the controls was a terrible mistake. "Pay no attention to them, General," said Erhard. "My advisors say the same thing." The results of lifting price controls were immediate and dramatic. Stores that had been all but bare were stocked full of goods in no time at all. Instead of spending their hours in miserable lines waiting for the scarce staples of life under a command economy, people returned to productive activity. Employment expanded as the economy added 6 million new jobs between 1950 and 1960. While the unemployment rate fell from 10.3% to 1.2%, wow, over the decade, economic growth averaged 8%. Industrial production soared by 25% in 1950 alone, and by 18% the next year. Germany was rebuilt. Prosperity was restored. Truly, it was an economic miracle. During the post-war occupation of Germany, the American and British authorities banned F.A. Hayek's seminal 1944 book, The Road to Serfdom, for fear it would offend the Soviets. Hayek's work described the way in which a central economic authority's planning put a government at war with its own citizens, how it must become increasingly coercive in order to prevail, and how the coercive machinery of the central plan, once erected, can be employed to any coercive end. Violations of price controls was a capital offense in Diocletian's Rome and in the French Reign of Terror. But those are not the exception. Price controls have been accompanied by brutality throughout history. Dr. Murray Rothbard cites more recent episodes, cases that have been widely overlooked. And this is Murray. Why did Chiang Kai-shek lose China? The main reason is never mentioned, because he engaged in runaway inflation and then tried to suppress the results through price controls. To enforce them, he wound up shooting merchants in the public squares of Shanghai to make an example of them. He thereby lost his last shreds of support to the insurgent communist forces. A similar fate awaited the South Vietnamese regime, which began shooting merchants in the public squares of Saigon to enforce its price decrees. And then Charles goes on. Despite these dangers and their demonstrable ineffectiveness throughout the ages, wage and price controls remain a political favorite. It is inevitable that a thunderous demand for them will arise in the high inflation periods ahead. Often in their initial appearance, wage and price controls will masquerade as voluntary. Question: what's the difference between voluntary and mandatory wage and price controls? Answer: about 6 months. The more aggressively they are implemented, the more certain it is that the economy will grind to a halt. As a commercial collapse proceeds, it is soon joined by a collapse of the social order. I encourage you to get the Dollar Meltdown by Charles Goyette, because it's a really enjoyable and informative and a really good read. I really highly recommend it. I was very impressed and very happy for him. And he's working on another book now. He has a deadline coming up in May sometime. You know, Penguin Books, Portfolio, which is their business section of Penguin Books, a big publisher out of New York, said, you know what, hey man, you can do another one. So he is. It's on freedom. And you know economics is going to play into it. This is what's going to happen. As you got rising food prices in the Middle East, here come wage and price controls. They're going to, oh, you can't. No, we're going to say we're going to keep the prices down. We're going to dole out some more money and some goodies and whatever. It's all over. I know where this goes. It's revolution. Worldwide government, worldwide revolution, man. You know, I just want to survive it. I want you to survive it, too. Together, we'll learn how, hear from the farm, and in the meantime, we'll also get the confirmation that we need to as we have great guests coming on. Sierra's got us all booked up next week, and we're going to learn a lot. And thanks for helping me kind of go through this stuff and refresh my memory on a lot of this Middle East information. I still got a lot of work to do. It's probably like 2 inches thick of paper I got to read. But we're going to understand this, because I see what's coming. It's going to be like the Marshall Plan for the Middle East. Wow. Talk to you tomorrow. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readersoffreedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readersoffreedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.